Stay out super late tonight, picking apples, making pie. Put a little something in our lemonade and take it with us. We're half away in a fake empire. We're half away in a fake empire.
Welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 54. It's been a few months. Tonight, it's Kirk Pettis and myself, Eric Taylor. We're going to talk about various and sundry topics that kind of came up. What, last week, Kirk, you shot over a link to a podcast, Free Domain Radio, right?
Yep.
Kind of where Roger Stone, who's a key cog in the Trump political machine, was being interviewed, and you thought it was kind of interesting. I found it to be interesting. It was good. I appreciate you sending that over. It's good.
Yeah, I found I've always liked Stefan Molyneux, and yeah, it was interesting because because previously you had shared a bunch of stuff with Oliver Stone inside the, I forgot what group it was, but what's the group that you were talking about?
Group?
Yeah, that starts with an M.
M, like a music group or
no? The group that Roger Stone's a part of.
The Manafort's.
Yes.
Yeah. So Manafort is really Trump's campaign manager, or he has been, Paul Manafort. But they're both really just old school paleo conservative Nixon types, essentially, is what they are, right? And they're, I think, pretty key voices. I mean, they're obviously, it's the main voice, which is Trump, but they're key voices behind kind of what you hear on a day to day. And I think they've had quite a bit to do with his kind of his political campaign. And the more you listen to Roger Stone, he's certainly been involved with Trump for what, 30 odd years, and kind of with the family in general for quite a while. And off that interview, it kind of sounded like he was really trying to get Trump to run as far back as the late 80s, right?
And yeah, it's pretty interesting to go back that far and hear kind of a little insider talk. But yeah, I don't know. When I guess what this all started from was during just the conventions here, the national conventions, and I really wasn't paying attention very much. And I flipped on the Republican convention on the last day and saw Tom Barrack speak, and then Ivana, and then Trump speak. And I thought they did pretty good. But like I said, I haven't been paying attention or whatnot. So it's easy to think some speeches to get feel a little optimistic by some speeches when you haven't heard political speeches for a little while. Heard them in context and in full entirety, so besides little news clips. But I just find this whole election process absolutely hilarious. So
why is that?
It's such a mockery. I obviously this is just history in the making. I mean, like, we've been active before, and I don't think you can look back and think that this will be like any election in the future or in the past. And it's very contentious, and the things people are saying are generally really hypocritical at the same time. Right on. It's something to behold. Everything I hear negative about Trump is just doesn't really seem factual. It's just kind of all hyperbole and just general trying. I view it as pure spin. And I'm from both sides, really. So everything I hear from Hillary Clinton's side is all generally spin, deflecting from any issue. And then when I hear people talk about Trump, it's generally spin and not really talking about concrete facts and whatnot. It's just kind of trying to deflect and kind of create what people want you to think in a way. So It's been it's fun to behold, really.
Yeah, and one of the things when I was kind of to, because to me it sounds like you warmed up to Donald Trump in general. Would that be an accurate statement or?
Actually, that would be an accurate statement. I'm not yeah, I would say that's it's not that I'm warmed up to where I'd go out and vote for him, but I'm actually more curious to see what would happen. I don't believe any of the negativity that's thrown at him and the power that people say he would have and this and that, but for the most part, I guess I could say that after that convention speech, I was like, man, I might have to rethink not voting, and if I'd maybe actually go out there and vote for him. And so, but it really doesn't. When I go back to my own principles, I just where I'm at right now, I just still couldn't do it. But
Oh, you couldn't at this point?
no.
And you
It's just
know.
not what I believe in. I just don't believe in people to rule over you. I believe much more in ruling yourself. So, and that's kind of the mantra of both parties right now is, oh, it's always been that way, but.
Yeah, I was kind of, I think I mentioned to you that I really thought that, you know, his speech was almost, it was just really dark. My view or kind of the way I interpreted it was that he basically w was appealing to the individual who really thought the best part of America or the best of times have come and gone, and that he's a strong guy and he can help usher in the way things used to be. And that to me, I don't know, it's just it doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of kind of where we are from a global perspective, from a free trade perspective. And you know, I'm interested in hearing kind of your feedback on that, but he appeals to me at least, to the individual who wants to bring back, you know, manufacturing, wants a strong man to make sure we're safe and it will cede their individual sovereignty and liberties to an individual or a group of individuals to make sure that the country is prosperous. And that's kind of when he made, you know, allusions to, you know, the killings that are going on, the police shootings, and, you know, throw out statistics that were fact checked that weren't fact they weren't accurate. Actually, there have been less police shootings if you kind of account for everything up to this point this year than there were, you know, 5 years ago. And it's in my mind, it's more, you know, the population is more aware of the fact that these things happen because of news echo chambers, social media exposure. You know, people who may not even have read the newspapers in the past will see them right in their face from Facebook Live videos and that type of thing, which, you know, can make it look like what he's saying is factual, but in reality, a lot of the stuff that I hear from him, I simply don't believe are true. And, you know, for me, it's problematic. You know, and for example, I work in the tech industry, and there was an open letter signed by 200 CEOs and engineers stating that his stances on global trade would be hugely damaging to the U.S. economy. You know, while they may help, or quote unquote, look to help, you know, individuals have been displaced from manufacturing jobs and that type of thing. I think, you know, a lot of his policies would be pretty detrimental to the economy and to freedom. And so I'm always interested. I was very interested, you know, and I've seen, and that's one of the reasons, you know, this is something I was kind of keen to hear from you, how people who are interested in liberty and freedom, even anarchy, which is, you know, the purest form of liberty, really, can appreciate philosophies and ideas from a strong man, essentially, you know, almost a dictatorial authoritarian like Trump, and say that this is good, you know, rather than, you know, someone else. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, I just have never thought of it as authoritarian or dictatorial, or I guess how when I listen to people's politicians speak, I usually gloss over a lot of what they say,
right,
and go back into the principles of what they derive it from.
Right.
And because I really don't think what people say and what happens really ever comes to fruition.
Right.
And so a lot of the talk of a lot of stuff I just don't think is relevant in the first place. And I think it's just all fluff speech to
get votes
and to get people's attention and following.
Yeah, it's marketing.
And I think from people like Roger Stone, I've heard a lot of Goldwater, Barry Goldwater talk and Ronald Reagan talk. And
thing about Stone that I was actually watching a podcast. Who's the Milo, the real controversial Milo Yiannopoulos?
Yep.
Milo. Yeah, Milo. I was listening to a podcast. He actually had him on a couple of days ago, Roger Stone. And I don't know. That's the first time I've heard Milo speak, actually. And I've kind of pigeonholed him as a fascist, you know, right wing nut job, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, actually listening to what he had to say seemed pretty reasoned, and you know, a lot of stuff that he was talking about. And one of the things that Roger Stone was talking about in the interview is the fact that, you know, Barry Goldwater was the individual that really got him into politics. And he was really young at that time. He was 12 years old and drove across the country to the RNC, Republican National Convention in California. And, you know, just really... It was a good experience for him and kind of set him up for his future. And I think people have varying opinions about Barry Goldwater, but he's a pretty good conservative mentor, political mentor to have, you know, as far as if you're going to go down that path, right?
Yeah, I would sure think so, and that's why I find it refreshing to hear that kind of talk, and for anyone to derive those kind of principles in the matter is more encouraging towards liberty than the Republican establishment now.
Right.
And so when I hear the media constantly just taking things out of context and using whatever means necessary to deride Trump, it actually makes me more in Trump's corner.
I think it does it for a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people that are like, you can push us, but we're going to push back harder, right? And that's kind of an appeal.
Yes. And then to hear the Republican Party come out and do the same thing is just like doubling down on it. It makes me even like Trumpy all the more.
Right.
I mean, that's why I say this is something to behold. I mean, for one, you got the Republican Party totally dragging their feet whenever possible against Trump and really undercutting them at any means possible, at any available, you know, opportunity that presents itself. And then you got the Democrat Party that just nominated someone that should really probably be in jail. And actually, when everything comes to light, I think when you look at the laws that have how we have written it, like she could be feasibly, legitimately put to death over everything that she's done.
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, it is. But I think that if you look at the law how it's written, that would be, I don't think we would ever do it that way anymore today.
Uh-huh.
Especially for one of our own.
Yeah.
But I really feel Hillary Clinton's campaign is really for her to stay out of jail.
Okay.
I don't believe that if Trump wins the presidency, that he can turn around and put the his opponent in jail. Mm-hmm. It would just be bad optics, mm-hmm. and bad for the country as whole. And it would end up being a big slap on the wrist and fines and whatnot. But I doubt there would be any jail time. Mm-hmm. And but that's why this whole candidacy is really to protect the system as is and to keep Hillary Clinton out of jail. And if they can con the American people into accepting her rigged election win, they will do it. But I don't think it can work.
And that was one of the things that Roger Stone is talking about, that he's pretty convinced that and you started to hear Trump talk about this more and more, especially it seems like over the last week or two, is that the elections are going to be rigged in November. And Stone is talking about Diable, which is the primary vendor that's responsible for voting machines, and how these machines are computers essentially, and how computers can be hacked or manipulated in any number of ways. And that he referenced, and this is getting into the realm of conspiracy, which I suppose isn't out of,
yeah, but it's talking about ideas, which I love. So
what's that?
It's talking about ideas and concepts.
Right,
still,
right.
So.
Right. So he referenced the 2004 election where Bush should have lost and Kerry should have won. And he won some states, Ohio, Florida, that certainly were most likely either bought or paid for or rigged through voter manipulation, and how that type of thing has a tendency. Of course, I imagine that you're going to hear the same thing from the Democratic side, as it tends to happen, at least from a conservative perspective, more on the Democrat side than the Republican side. But he also said that, to a large extent, a lot of states are open to the highest bidder as far as,
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think California was totally rigged in Hillary's camp. I don't believe Bernie lost that election. Mm-hmm. Was that why?
Because I noticed a good contingent out of California, the Sanders delegates, just walked out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was really the derailing of Bernie's campaign. Well, yeah. Bernie was constantly winning and really kicking Hillary's butt, and then it came out the day before. What was it? I forgot what happened, but it pretty much just said Hillary won the day before. Mm. They'd made something. Oh yeah, she already had enough electoral votes to win the nomination. Right, the day before the nomination, the California primary. And that really kind of just threw the whole that allowed the manipulation of the voting to take hold, where it's like, oh yeah, well, obviously people just went and voted for Hillary because she already won, or Bernie people stayed home. It granted the credence of the rigged election. And I think overall it's going to be the same thing. I think Hillary Clinton's being told, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, just keep fighting, keep fighting, keep fighting. You're going to win. You're the person. And I really think the numbers are going to show up for Trump so overwhelming that it's why I think Trump is really endangering himself for his life.
Yeah.
That will be the next step.
And, there's been, I'm sure you've heard this, that it's not coincidental that an establishment Republican is the vice presidential pick.
Right? Well, and that's what's so funny to hear how that came to be, where it seemed like the establishment hoodwinked Trump into throwing that down his throat.
It's one heartbeat, basically, away. It's basically,
Well, they kind of leaked information that he was going to be the nominee, and it just put bad optics. And for how Trump operates, he couldn't it make him look weak for him to be like, no, this isn't my nominee, And it's the ball was just starting to move, and he couldn't slow it down, and he had to go with it.
Who do you think he wanted? Play some music.
Hello.
Interlude. I was about to throw on an interlude here. You're gone for about probably 20 seconds. Are you back?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Now you can?
Can hear you now.
What in the world?
What's going on?
I have no idea about the same thing. So,
Yeah.
where did any idea where to get cut off there?
I asked you who you thought he really wanted to take.
Oh yeah, I think he was just playing the establishment and saying that he was considering Christie and everyone else, but I think and Pence and whatnot, but I don't know. As for me to be biased, I was thinking that so he should pick either a Ron Paul or a even Rand Paul.
I don't think either one would accept a vice presidential nomination from him.
I probably, well,
I don't think that would happen. Because Rand Paul skipped the convention. Some people just did it, and I think it was political. And Ron Paul, I don't know if you, I do watch a fair amount of, he has a Liberty Report that he generally broadcasts on a daily basis. And he's been very critical of Donald Trump.
Oh, that's, I think it was Buchanan. That's who I thought would be the
Oh,
nominee.
Pat Buchanan?
Yep.
Okay.
That
Gotcha.
was, I was thinking that some, if Ron Paul would guarantee a Trump win,
Yeah.
Pat Buchanan would as well. It would be my take on the matter. So, and by him playing the establishment pick, it really, yeah, I could, that was my first instinct right away when I heard that. I'm like, well, that, there he goes. He just put a target on his chest, big time.
Yeah, the kind of
With
the
that,
idea that potentially, there could be some motivation to not have him as president once he is president, that kind of idea.
yeah, that would be. And even before the election, anything between now and then, like what was that? This guy just got arrested with bringing a gun into Trump Towers.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh man, he had a silencer or a suppression. And he was an ex-FBI agent that supposedly died like 7 years ago.
Oh, our man at Trump Tower was drunk, had no plans to shoot. At least this is what it says in the story. This was from yesterday. He wasn't gunning for the Donalds. He was just drunk and didn't want to be told where to walk. The armed man taken into custody outside of
Yeah,
Trump
with
Tower
the
with a gun as Donald Trump
suppressor.
walked nearby was a retired cop who had no plans to shoot the blowhard billionaire, official said Wednesday. I'm sure that's exactly how they put
Yeah.
it. Anthony Shark, 54, was quote unquote walking through a secured area along the sidewalk outside of Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue and East 56th Street just after 10 p.m. Tuesday when he was busted, officials said. Shark, a retired NYPD officer, works as a security guard at Tony Harry Winston Jewelry, which has a store across the street from Trump Tower, prosecutors said. He has a permit to carry a concealed weapon. Officials said sources said he tried to barge through the frozen zone set up for the GOP presidential nominee's approaching motorcade. Secret Service agents formed a human wall to try and stop Shark from pushing through, according to court papers. Shark then attempted to push through the United States Secret Service agents that were blocking his path. The complaint says USS agents attempted to restrain Shark, whereupon he refused, flailing his arms, clenching his fists, and grabbing at agents. While resisting USS agents, Shark repeatedly grabbed at and held on to at least one USS agent, the paper said. Agents who restrained Shark discovered a firearm in a holster. Shark is accused of assaulting and resisting Secret Service agents. That kind of it's
Yeah, it sounds
contradictory.
like it was just a random stroll down the road,
It
I had no intention of doing anything. Jeez.
just happened to try and barge through
Yeah,
a barricade with
that's what you
a
do, yeah,
firearm.
when you see Secret Service.
Yes.
Bullshit.
that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. That reeks of something else than just
It reeks of mind control is what it reeks
that's
of.
what I was going to say, but a little MK Ultra, but I don't want to get there. Go ahead.
Especially with, that's what I heard on No Agenda. So I hadn't heard that
Oh,
anything
you
about him
didn't?
just being a police officer or a security guard. What Adam Curry was talking about today was that he was ex-FBI, and apparently the FBI lists him as deceased 7 years ago.
Oh, really? So
Yeah.
he's a walking dead drunk guy just out for a good time, happens
Nope.
to in a little trouble. That's pretty good. That's a good find. It's good stuff.
But yeah, so going back to Trump being authoritarian, I just don't see it.
Yeah,
and that's why I was like, man, we should have a podcast, because I was hoping that I'd like to hear more insights, because the more people I talk to, the more people I hear are all for Trump, and it's I put it as people. You know, we're Americans. We like competition.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump's up there saying he's going to do something. Mm-hmm. People don't know what the hell he's going to do.
I don't know that he's
going to do something. It's just same thing with Obama, the hope and change. Yep. It was no one knew what the hell he was going to do, but they wanted change. And they're to try something new, because no one likes the direction of the country. We've been at war for how long? We freaking go to war with everyone right now. It's disgusting. And the machine is just churning away. Nothing makes sense. Look at Europe. Why the hell are they taking in all the immigrants? They have all the terrorism problem. There's no rhyme or reason to be taking in hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of so-called refugees when we're displacing them in the Middle East ourselves. And that's it's disgusting. And so Trump comes along and saying, hey, let's what does government do? It has policy and regulations and how it governs itself. Let's take a step back and let's actually really investigate how we want to take people from this area, you know, when there's supposedly terrorism going on. And I just don't see that as bigotry. I think it sounds as common sense governance. And if you're going to have immigration policy and you have issues with, so-called Islamic radical Islam, then it's time to, actually take a step back and figure out, well, how do we know what's radical and what's mainstream? Mm-hmm. And differentiate itself. And there's no reason why Europe is doing what it is doing. The people don't want it. It's not a democracy action. This is purely a top-down globalist initiative. And Americans see right through it. And even though the media hides it as best as possible, and I believe people just don't want it to happen. And at least to take a step back and readjust and figure out what the hell is going on. I mean, damn, we've been at war with Iraq for 15, damn near almost 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Or Afghanistan. Iraq's at what, a dozen years? And now we're going back into Libya again.
Yeah.
We've been trying to overthrow Assad for years now. It's absolutely ridiculous. And people are fed up. I'm fed up. I'm totally willing to step back, and I see a candidate that is actually willing to readjust on our so-called American interests in the Middle East. And I could go into that further if you want, but well, and then that, there's also the Russian thing.
Yeah, there's some comments, and you can probably feed off of them too. The thing that's so there seems to be, he seems to touch the kind of the strain of protectionism that is kind of becoming more and more prevalent in the United States. So keep out nasty foreign interests. Some of his rhetoric about, pulling out of NATO or suggesting that countries pay for their own defense. And that they shouldn't expect to be on the dole, like many European countries are, many countries across the world, or the United States is by far and away the best funded military by 10 times the closest foreign military So picking up.
Or put them all together combined.
Yeah, exactly.
The entire world compared to ours.
You know, so he talks about pulling out of various areas. And then on the other hand, and this is kind of what you get a lot from Donald Trump, at least from what I've observed. On the other hand, he talks about building up the military. So you're like, what are you talking about? Are you, on one hand, you're talking about weakening NATO, allowing countries to fend for themselves, or if they need United States resources for, you know, to actually pay for them. And then on the other hand, you're talking about building up the military. So there's, and it, this is, to me, seems to be pretty common for what he says. Like, he'll say one thing one day, and a lot of the times you hear something that's almost completely contradictory the next. So it's like he's trying to have it both ways. And like you were saying earlier, really market to as many people as possible. And you don't really know what his true agenda is. You can kind of trust what you think you know his agenda is, but you don't know. But he does talk about, which I think if you're going to talk about it from a liberty perspective, even what's going on in Europe and what's going on in the United States, and I've said this in the past, I really believe that the Middle East, the fact that you have such radical Muslim activity taking hold is because of what Ron Paul has coined and other people as blowback, where you meddle in other countries and you essentially stir up a hornet's nest and then they'll go all over the place and they'll attack you right back. And you know, you can look at that when you're looking at ISIL coming out of Iraq, it's a power vacuum. You look at Afghanistan, you look at Syria, you know, you go in and, or even Libya now, which is delving back into what looks to be a civil war situation again. And you have all these, and military operations destabilizes these countries. And then you have the violence in Europe and you have violence in the United States and that type of thing. And I'm not too sure. It sounds like on one hand, Trump will do something about that, but I'm not too sure that he will when he talks about, you know, boosting military spending.
Well, I look at it as posturing.
Yeah.
I think he's just posturing constantly. I think it's his
philosophy, his, right?
how he does, and because it keeps everything. People guessing, you can't really pin him down, and that puts you at a complete advantage in bargaining or deal making or
art of
you know.
The deal type of deal.
And so that's really a lot what government is. But at the same time, it's always under the table. It's not talked about. You push it aside. You don't put that in the public sphere, you know. And so that's why it's so it's brash. It's barbarian if you look at it from an elitist globalist stance. Yeah. And I think that he doesn't. He believes and doesn't believe it all at the same time. But the only thing that gives me hope is that he actually will bring forth topics that no one else would, other than someone like Ron Paul.
Like what? And what topics of import in your mind is he?
Well, for one, stopping immigration from so-called terrorist areas. Mm-hmm. I think stopping illegal immigration through the southern border. Mm-hmm. Those are the two main things that really are affecting a lot of people in mm-hmm. this country. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a whole bubble of society that doesn't have to deal with any of that. And they don't see it. And it's hidden from the media by the media. Mm-hmm. And because it just doesn't fit into the scheme of the direction of what our country wants. And I believe government loves problems. I don't think government ever wants to fix anything. And Donald Trump actually is out there trying to, that's one of my biggest theses is that I think he actually wants to fix things. And it's got government, you know, establishment scared shitless because they don't want to fix anything. Mm. That actually cuts budgets by fixing stuff.
Right.
And government's never intended to fix anything, and it's just not how it's set up to be. They'll talk like they need to, and this and that, and it's all hyperbole. It doesn't hold the you know the truth test of what actually gets put into place and how things are enacted and being an efficient matter. And so it's I'm curious what would happen under a Trump presidency, but to me, it doesn't matter. And I think from our last podcast, I said Trump is the prototypical presidential candidate for America today, for what people want out of government. They want government to do this and that. They want government to be involved and to be proactive and supposedly on top of these issues. And I don't think personally that that is what government does or what it is intended to be and what it should be. And but they play the game like they are, and that's how they gain the influence and the power. But he, and really, it boils down to all about power and control. And control, that's why I say we're in the Middle East, not because we need the oil, but because we can't allow anyone else to control the oil. We have to be in control, the people that control the oil in the Middle East. Or and Africa. So for anyone else to come in and damage that power that we have or to relinquish that to anyone else, aka Russia or China. Libya, to set up a you know a gold dinar or whatever and go off the U.S. dollar is absolutely against U.S. interests that our media and our politicians will never say as such, but they will say it's against our interests. What are our interests? We don't know. The public doesn't know what the American interests are, but they throw that around left and right, and it's disgusting.
I would suggest that the interest of foreign policy is multinational corporations. That's what the interest is.
That is, yes. I view
government as a vehicle for multinational corporation profits. I think, at least in my observation, that if you want to distill, there's no simplistic answer to anything, right? But if you want to distill down into the purest answer as far as why there is so much geopolitical chaos in Africa, in the Middle East specifically, would be it boils down to capitalism and control of natural resources.
Yes, but I believe just by saying multinational corporations, I think that is just a vessel. It's not an entity of its own. If it wasn't for that, it would be something else.
But there are companies that are interested in profit, and they will utilize
how the public is pushed into it. Mm-hmm. But from the top, it is all about controlling the power. The power is controlled through government, money, food, or resources, I could put it in there. Under resources would be food, water, oil, you know, the lot. You can go down the list. Sure. And that's where the corporations come into play.
Yeah, yeah. And I mentioned this when I was talking with Lydia a couple days ago, a movie called Clinton Cash, which, you know, not coincidentally was released the day before the Democratic National Convention started, that outlines the Clinton Global Initiative and really just suggests that a lot of what is done by the Clintons is essentially as a result of multinationals looking for different deals, different business contracts and different flavors. And one of the things that, and I was interested to hear what your take is on this, and I've heard this and some people just refute it outright. It certainly looks like there could be some of that when you talk about the Trump camp, but those interests look to be Russian, and either they're fabricated or not, but Trump has financed a lot of deals with Russian money, no longer uses U.S. banks at all to finance his real estate projects.
That he doesn't use them anymore. They don't use him.
They won't deal with them. Yeah, so he uses
Deutsche Bank. So that's been my bigger question is why would they not deal with them?
Because it's not worth the hassle.
I think that's a bigger badge of honor.
You think so? Yeah, and to me, if a financial institution doesn't want to deal with somebody, it's a red flag.
Really. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think he deals with Russia.
But when you have someone.
It is and it isn't. It depends on the level.
Yeah, but to me, that's
I know what you're saying, yes. That's a country red flag built, to an extent.
That's a country built on bribes, kickbacks, and corruption. That's the political culture of Russia. And when you're in bed, or when you're dealing with them and you disavow the fact that you are dealing with them, there's a lot of documentation that you have been. That to me is another red flag. And then another one, you saw the Republican, the Trump cap cared nothing about anything within the Republican Party platform at the National Convention except for one thing. And it was how Russia was dealt with vis-a-vis Ukraine. That's the only plank that they had anything to say about. And, you know,
I'm not following you. What do you mean that the who had what to say about?
That the Trump camp had anything to say about. So they wanted to soften or basically
make Russia not an issue in Ukraine. And I'm all for that.
Not making Russia an issue in Ukraine. So there's a conflict there.
I believe we instigated the whole Ukraine thing from the get-go, and I don't believe – I think we were in the wrong.
Right.
And but I think Russia acted what should be predicted Russia would do.
What do you think about the fact that Manafort, his campaign manager, was a campaign manager of the old Ukrainian prime minister for 10 years? I mean, these things – the level of Russian involvement in the both financially and politically – higher up in the Trump campaign, if you look at it objectively, causes, I think, as much concern geopolitically as the corruption within the Clinton campaign, which to me always opens up the third rail. And you're talking about how you mentioned earlier that it's never been more popular. Somebody like Trump has never been more popular, and it's a president that Americans deserve. But one of the things that we haven't discussed is the fact that Gary Johnson probably will go from 1% of the total vote in 2012 to very likely over 8, maybe as high as 15. And that represents an 800 to 1,500% increase in popularity in 4 years for a libertarian candidate.
And that's why I said that's significant. That was Trump's mistake in picking a VP on the establishment side.
It's a significant. I mean, that's because by far the largest growth in political popularity that we've seen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, you don't. If
Trump is still alive come election day. I think with how much – I think people that will actually go and vote, if Hillary is anywhere sniffing the presidency, people will go vote for Trump.
You think so?
Yeah. If Trump is running away with it, Gary Johnson will blow up. I think the liberals will go out and vote for Gary Johnson or Stein. And I believe there's not a chance in hell Hillary Clinton could ever win this election. There is no one out there. I mean, it's under 5% of the populace that is for Hillary. I mean, it is all a contrived media creation to have Hillary where she is today.
And if you look, like when you say that, but if you look at the current Real Clear Politics poll, she's up 47. She's up 47-40 over Trump in a two-way, and she's up by about 5% in a four-way race, and she's increased over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and exactly. And before the convention, this is my take. Mm-hmm. Hillary's getting trounced. Mm-hmm. So they derived the polls to say that she's being beat by Trump pre-convention. And then all of a sudden, the convention tied everything together. Everyone's for Hillary now. And now she's leaning the polls because of she united the party. Everyone's behind her. Mm-hmm. It's all BS.
You don't believe it?
I don't believe a word of it. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. How many Hillary bumper stickers have you seen?
You have to consider where you live. You live in the most conservative county in the state.
I drive all over every day.
Yeah.
I've seen maybe five Hillary's bumper stickers.
I haven't seen I don't think I haven't seen very many Trump bumper stickers either, though. Have you?
I've seen about just as many.
Yeah, he does.
I've hardly seen any, but because people still are afraid of saying that they are for Trump. Mm-hmm. If you turn on the news, you switch to any headline of any news station, it's all anti-Trump. You go on your iPhone, you switch, you know, scroll to the left and see the news every day. I love to just look at it and see. It's like half the, you know, you have four news headlines. Mm-hmm. Two of the four are always anti-Trump. Mm-hmm. And they're all just seemingly made up crap. It doesn't, I mean, there's no factual, like, this is exactly how it is. It's all just speculation and theorizing and pure demonizing the guy. Mm-hmm. And it's unreal. And then for them to sit there and chastise Trump for demonizing people, this and that, and it's a mockery. It's just – it's hilarious. And most of the people just do not care. But most of the people that I've, you know, talked to, that they just like, I'm probably going to vote for Trump. But the funny thing is, so you either have the diehard liberals or the diehard Republicans. And those are the two factions of the populace that are anti-Trump. Mm-hmm. The complete middle of the road seem to be totally in favor of Trump. If not, Bernie or Trump, one of those two.
Right.
And so that's why there's no way Hillary ever won. But then when you look at Trump and that he acquired more votes than any other, you know, hopeful nominee in history of the Republican Party, that is something – that is not something to overlook. Mm-hmm. And that is actually an incredible feat. And I say that as completely because of Ron Paul. I think Ron Paul laid the groundwork for Donald Trump to be where he is. And I believe
I'm curious. How we always said
that people are always saying that Hillary Clinton is the most qualified candidate. Uh-huh. I believe Donald Trump is the most qualified, not qualified, but the most prepared candidate America at the right time in the right situation that America has ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that's why Trump is running away with this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because really what you're observing and hearing and seeing don't match the numbers that are being presented, right? And there are a lot of polls. You can look at Real Clear Politics, and they take an aggregate of the last 12, and they lump together 12 polls. And I imagine your argument would be that most of these have a liberal bias, right? And don't paint an accurate picture of what's actually happening. Would that be kind of...
That is precisely it. And yeah. I think people are reluctant to admit, they're hesitant, but the more the media is instigating the negativity and the derision, the demonization of Trump, that the more people are getting fed up with it. And they're going to start even speaking their minds more and more and be more in the forefront for Trump. And it's I'm just looking forward to it. I find it all fascinating. Personally, I think, like I always say, it's I believe in personal governance. I believe in the non-aggression and no coercion. And I don't believe that a state-down system is required to enact that amongst civilization. I think that is a personal choice, and it should be educated. And that's something to be achieved and strived after. And that's something that the education system should be pushing, that you achieve to. You're not born with it. You're born with the ability to attain it. And to go out there and pursue knowledge that grants you the livelihood of living with non-aggression, and to have the mental knowledge of dealing with that, and the self-realization of what is and isn't aggression, and to go down those paths, and to have people the ability to make mistakes and to learn from the mistakes, and an open, free society that could easily, when culture pushes aggression, that we can, in a free society, actually grow from that, the negativity and self-realization that of the negative aspects of this aggression that you thought was justified, that isn't, and that, you know, leads to bad occurrences, blowback or whatever, and it's something to be realized instead of just glossed over and say, oh, we need more government, we need more regulation to fix this problem, government's the answer, and all that does is create more and more problems. And it's so therefore Trump isn't my guy, isn't my president.
Yeah.
Isn't, you know, and Hillary definitely doesn't follow that suit, in my opinion, either. And so it's just interesting. And that's why I just don't see him as an authoritarian. I believe that government's not set up that way.
Yeah.
And obviously the Republican Party's dragging their feet, and they would have to control the House, Senate, and follow Trump box, step, and barrel to everything in his wishes. To, you know, it doesn't happen. Barack Obama had the House and the, you know, no, he had this, yeah, he had the House and the Senate, didn't he, when he first got elected?
He had it for 2 years, yeah.
Yeah. So he had, you know, full control. And what happened?
He got through Obamacare.
Very little happened in the first 2 years.
He got through Obamacare. And then the first 2 years, and then he also had the most, you could argue, you know, well, Federal Reserve was liberal, progressive, even though that Bernanke was appointed by a conservative, but had the most liberal monetary policy by far in the history of the United States.
Do you think that was a carryover to Bush, though? I felt I didn't really feel like it changed.
You know, you can argue it was political or it was economic. We did have it, when Obama came into office, the economy was in the worst shape that it's been in probably 70 years. We had the financial crisis that was in place because of the commodity market crashes and financial combined with the mortgage crisis that took hold. So the economy is essentially in a free fall, and they were battling a deflationary spiral when they ended up papering over with multiple implementations of TARP and monetary easing. So they printed more money by far than ever has been printed to counteract a deflationary depression, essentially.
Yeah, but that, I just that, don't that, see that as a Democrat or Republican thing.
His big thing that he was able to do the first 2 years was Obamacare, and that's a significant.
Yeah, but significant that just squeaked through. I mean, but the bribes and manipulation that had to happen for that to get passed, and for
it wouldn't have
that,
made it through
that election to go.
If he didn't have the House and the Senate, it wouldn't have passed. It wouldn't have happened. So those are a couple of things.
That's true, but that's still far from an authoritarian thing.
Absolutely, it is. When you dictate, people have to have insurance, otherwise you're
fine. But that's what government is. I mean, that's why I say Trump is perfect for the government today.
Yeah,
I don't agree with how it is, but that is what government is. And
well, it doesn't have to be.
I just wish it was voluntary.
Yeah,
I wish people could opt in and opt out. Mm-hmm. And if people are all for it, then go ahead and pay for it. But don't put a gun to someone's head to make them pay for it.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, I take, one thing that before I start on my thing, we can wrap it up here in a couple of minutes. You mentioned that you saw Ron Paul kind of pave the way for Donald Trump's success. How so? What exactly? I haven't really thought about that before. I've heard it a few times, but
You have heard it? I thought that was my original thought.
No, yeah, I've heard it, but I've heard it by the fact that, you know, he brought in, you know, quite a few individuals who wouldn't participate in the political process otherwise, which Trump has also done. You know, a lot of people who are thinking of or who have voted in the primaries and are voting in the general election, they haven't voted in forever, which also, you know.
Or even a part of
the Republican Party at all. So, but like in your mind, what did you see as kind of the blueprint that Paul kind of put together for that Trump took advantage of?
Especially in caucus states like Minnesota here?
You dropped for about 10, 15 seconds.
Oh, dang it. All right. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
All right. So I think Ron Paul really paved the way just because of the wedge he put in the Republican system.
Sure.
And, you know, because it's a private organization and they have rules and codes that they follow. And Ron Paul played by the rules. He did it. And the Republicans had to change the rules midstream to really ostracize him, you know, really push him aside. And like you said, how Roger Stone has been pushing for Trump to run for the last 38 years.
Yep.
That Trump has been in the wings observing.
Yeah, he has been. He's been studying. He's flirted with running many more times. He said, oh, but he's seriously, you could argue he's seriously started flirting with the presidency in 1988.
Yeah.
And his family has been very much into politics. From what Roger Stone suggested is that Donald Trump helped deliver the election for Ronald Reagan.
Oh yeah, because he loaned his plane.
Yeah, well,
yeah, because Ronald Reagan wouldn't have been able to sign up to be on the ballot of New York State without Donald Trump letting Reagan use his plane or his campaign to fly up there and sign the papers, and they made it by like 15 minutes before the deadline.
Right. So he's key, and he's been key in the conservative.
That's why I say it gives me credence to be like, well, you know, at least in the background that he maybe his core principles is on the Goldwater Reagan
paleoconservative side. It seems to me to be the Buchanan Goldwater Reagan type of Nixon type of type of side of things.
And I believe Trump's a smart enough guy and being in business that you just can't go out there and be an ideologue.
Sure.
You have to play the game and you don't wear your opinions on your sleeve. And that's why I say for how Trump talks and or people saying that, oh, Trump said this, Trump said that, I don't believe he ever really fully means anything he says, because that's not him to ever, he would never put his opinions out there unless, you know, he was completely adamant about it, like something like stopping illegal immigration, you know, or the rule of law. You know, a government's set up to have law, and if you're going to have it set up that way, then you should enforce it. Otherwise, get rid of it.
Real quick, I want to wrap up in probably about 5 minutes here. So getting back to the Paul point, you saw Paul kind of getting that blueprint into place, kind of your theory on him laying the foundation was by getting disenfranchised people to get back into the game, essentially. Do you think that's something
it was a two-pronged thing. Yes, yep. That is just the main effort right there, is that he showed that it could be done.
Yep.
That the caucus states can be won more easily than the primary. And so then the primary, you just got to win on the global, you know, main issues.
Sure.
But and so that laid the groundwork there. The other groundwork was by the establishment itself. Mm-hmm. The people that are the grunt, you know, the people that are out there volunteering their time, that believe in the party, that aren't a part of the insider, the elite Republican class that is the private party itself.
Yeah.
They're out there, you know, fighting for it. And for two, you know, different presidential elections, they had to fight someone, Ron Paul, that they struggled to fight with. Mm-hmm. That his principles, his ethics, his morality was, you know, at such a pure level that you couldn't argue again. And it highlighted the corruption inside the party to dethrone a Ron Paul's, you know, presidential run. Mm-hmm. And that people just don't gloss over that. They gloss over it at the time because they are wrapped up in, you know, whatever they're about. People just go with the flow. They get wrapped into things, and things to argue for what they think is right can, you know, they easily get spoon fed that stuff. And that's why I say all the spin and all the hoopla, you know, that's what the media has always fostered and how the parties have always controlled people that way. Mm-hmm. And I think by self-realization of the manipulation that the party had done to them throughout the years, that it really, and not only that, but it's like my own father. He told me that, you know, after at the beginning of this election, he was so fed up. He's like, I'm embarrassed that I voted for Romney. No, because people look back and they think that, you know what, maybe I would have gave Ron Paul more of an opportunity 4 years ago. And so now they actually are ignoring the snake salesmen and through the media and the spin doctors, and they are, you know, kind of actually they listen to Trump more when he was an underdog from the get-go. And I think that's what really catapulted him, is because of the effects Ron Paul had on the subconscious of people and the conscious level.
That makes sense.
From 4 to 8 years ago.
Yeah. So I have a couple of thoughts, and you can wrap it up because you'll probably have some things to say. I think Donald Trump's a pretty dangerous presidential candidate myself, specifically. I have a hard time even squaring. You know, I'm not a fan of Hillary Clinton, but his trade policy to me is just, it goes beyond the pale when you talk about closing down free trade, putting tariffs in place to protect against China, et cetera. I think probably the most important, and this is very, you know, this is a very big tenet to libertarianism in general. The most important thing is peace through prosperity. Prosperity through peace. So that means open borders for both people and goods. So closing down borders because of fear and protectionism, I think, is harmful in the long run. And going after China for manipulation of currency or trade, I think, is a red herring. The United States does that more than any other country in the world and needs to police itself before it polices other people. I'm encouraged. You know, a lot of people talk about the libertarian ticket as being, you know, conservative light, but I'm encouraged by the fact that more people are aware of the libertarian movement, of the philosophy of principles, than really have ever been before with Johnson and Weld. I think that's beneficial. You know, you can say things about anyone. They're certainly not anarchists or, you know, pure libertarians, but they're by far better than what you're going to find with the Trump or with Clinton, as far as not being beholden to large money interests and really focusing on peace and prosperity. So prosperity through peace and strength. But I know that there are a lot of people who respect Donald Trump for what he says, but he to me is... He's a pretty threatening individual, obviously to the Republican Party and to the people in general. But that's just my take, and you know, certainly
I like that take. I just think that that negativity, or I mean the what was it you just said? The dangerousness and the hatred that he has generated is appealing to me.
Yeah, I don't. It does. That's just.
I think government is completely unsustainable in itself. And I think someone like Donald Trump is needed to semi right the ship that is unsustainable. I don't think it can be fixed, but I think it can be patched up in a sense. And I think he's the guy that will do it and maybe prolong the empire for a little while more.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he can do as much damage as people think. And I just think I think all these things were said about Ronald Reagan at the same time. Mm-hmm. And but all right, I lost track of where I wanted to go, but all right, I wanted to make a few predictions too.
Okay, give 2 minutes and wrap it. I'll give the cut.
One prediction: I think Paul Ryan's gonna lose
the
primary.
It looks like they're throwing up a challenger and endorsing him and trying to get that done, right?
And that's going to completely shatter the Republican Party. And that will actually, I don't know. Well, I won't go any further than that.
Okay.
But my other prediction is Donald Trump wins the
primary. You're back.
Yeah. Wow,
some
that's
serious
crazy.
Glitches going on here. I've never seen it like this before.
Yeah, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
I don't know where I left off, but I said I believe Donald Trump's going to win the presidency, and when he does so, he's going to start building that wall.
Yep.
And I believe, even though that all the talk is the anti-amnesty, that Paul Ryan's going to lose the election because of his granting amnesty and all these other programs that people are against,
yeah.
Donald Trump will end up granting amnesty.
Got it.
Is my prediction. And it will be on a level that, you know what, all violent criminals, or if you create any violence, you know, or violent crimes enacted, you will be deported, and those people will be, you know, kicked out of the country.
Yep.
And then any illegal immigrants before, you know, the so-called nationalization or amnesty, they will be deported. But in a sense that all nonviolent, so-called good people will, you know, law-abiding citizens, other than the fact that they're illegal, will be granted amnesty. That's my prediction.
Gotcha.
It's the only way to really ease into it. And I think people will be fully accepting it. As long as there's, like, so-called security on the border to stop the flow of, you know, legal immigration in, you know, in just a mental state, I would say, as anyways, that's all it will be anyways. That will allow for something like amnesty to be passed. But before a wall ever is built, American citizens will not be happy with any form of amnesty.
Gotcha.
Without it being thrown down their throat.
And I'm going to play a little jingle after that, because Hispanics love Trump.
Where are you from?
I'm from Colombia.
Colombia. And is this a setup? Did I ever meet you before? Huh?
I'm Hispanic and I vote for Mr. Trump. We vote for Mr. Trump! Yes! Mr. Trump! We love you! We love you! All the way to the White House! Trump! Yes!
Definitely not set up. No way.
Not at all.
You're beautiful. Thank you, John. Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you. Thank you. Be careful.
It was another person drunk walking down the street.
Be careful out there.
Great. That's so great.
Yeah, that's great.
Never met her before. She's amazing.
It's just funny how that works. But
but Roger Stone did meet her before.
Exactly. She's coached up real well. But, you know, I think hopefully the subsiding war on marijuana will help with a lot of violence-related issues coming out of Mexico.
Yeah, and Trump did say he would legalize marijuana. So
that's just a reason to vote for him right there. We'll see how it works out. It's interesting. I think I made pretty much, you know, the points that I wanted to make, and he had some good points.
It's going to be fun. Yeah, yeah. I like how we're both on the same page, but totally see things differently, and I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of allows you to see, you know, both sides of the equation. So that's always good. All right. Well, we're wrapping it up. It's been a few months. We'll be back sometime, or we won't. So for now.
Hopefully
adios,
we'll be back.
Mofo.
Hopefully. So.
Adios, mofo.